Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
Well, we've made it to the middle of the week. This is terrific news. Welcome to the Three Martini Lunch Wednesday edition. In for Greg Corumbus. I continue to be Brett Winterbull, joined by the continuing Jim Garrity from National Review. Jim?
Yep, that's correct. Nothing's changed since yesterday.
I'll tell you, this is an interesting day for some interesting martinis. The first ones are kind of cool, very exciting. Big developments in the world of Republicans and Democrats and Congress. And what's going on, Jim?
Obviously, look, it's a presidential year, so everybody's kind of focused on that. The down-ticket races tend to get a little bit less attention. But Republicans have a 25-seat majority. You would think that would be safe, but I've spoken to some Republicans who say, well, it's, you know, because of redistricting in a couple of states, it's not unthinkable that we could lose the House if things went really bad. They're not nervous about it, but they put it in the realm of possibility. So Republicans are looking for that low-hanging fruit. And two developments just in the last day, the first being Heath Shuler, a Democrat from North Carolina. His district is the kind of western tip of the state, very culturally conservative, rural district. Yet the guy has a lifetime ACU rating in the high 20s. Doesn't, you know, vote. He's pro-life. He's pro-gun. The NRA loves him, and he didn't vote for Pelosi for speaker. But, you know, if you had a conservative Republican in that seat, you'd have, you know, a lot more conservative votes there. So Shuler's been tough to dislodge, got elected in 06 and survived 2008, survived 2010. Apparently, as soon as I mentioned his name, every Washington Redskins listener in the audience groaned because they remember his less than glamorous days in the days of the Washington Redskins. But before then, he was a star at the University of Tennessee, Heisman Trophy contender, and maybe one of the all-time most popular athletes there. University of Tennessee is looking for a new athletic director, and the word from various sports radio hosts down in Knoxville, Tennessee, is that Shuler is being talked to as a potential athletic director for the university, which presumably would require him at the very least retire at the end of 2012, if not much sooner than that, which would, you know, create an open seat race and I think a fantastic chance for Republicans to pick up there.
Fantastic news. Exciting, exciting news.
And then moments before we came on air, I still want to see this confirmed, but the other big retirement for Democrats so far this cycle has been Dan Boren out in Oklahoma. Now, obviously, as far as we conservatives go, Dan Boren gives us very little to complain about. Pretty darn consistent, you know, conservative record, but didn't vote for Pelosi, but still is a Democrat and will, you know, vote the Democratic way every now and then. An extremely conservative district. This is Oklahoma, of course. When he announced his retirement, the Democrats thought that Brad Carson, the previous occupant of that seat, was going to run for that seat. Word is now just breaking that he will not run in 2012, making a Republican pickup all but certain. I mean, obviously, there could be an alien invasion in that district that would, you know, make things kerflooey or something like that. But all other things, you know, being equal, chances are Republicans will pick up this seat and give them a little bit more of a cushion for dealing with redistricting in Illinois and California and places like that. So two bits of good news for the NRCC this week so far.
That is huge. That coupled with the fact that Anthony Weiner continues to meddle in New York 9. I'm still going to hold out, even though it's like, you know, Democrat plus whatever, that we're going to pick up that seat, too, in Queens. So this is this is indeed a good martini. I like that a lot there, Jim Garrity. Way to bring it here. Unfortunately, we have to move on to a not so good martini here. A straight up bad martini. Damascus Dennis Kucinich goes to Syria. What happens next here, Jim?
Well, it's worth noting, really, this Dennis Kucinich, usually you'd say the Ohio Democrat, but at this point, it's not certain that, you know, Ohio is losing a House seat. And Kucinich has openly lamented that there's a very good chance that he may get redistricted, that he may be the loser, that he may get, you know, he may get plugged into, thrown into somebody else's district. So he has seriously contemplated going out to like Washington State or Maine. He's kind of shopping for a district across the country. So I usually like to refer to him as D-district to be named later. But anyway, he went to Syria, Damascus recently, whereas, you know, listeners know, there's been quite a bit of a very violent suppression of an uprising against the Assad regime. According to the Syrian news agencies, Kucinich came out and said, President Assad is highly loved and appreciated by the Syrians. He cares so much about what is taking place in Syria. It's evident in his effort towards a new Syria, and everyone who meets with him can be certain of this. Now, obviously, knowing Kucinich's, you know, track record, this isn't the most unbelievable statement ever to come out from him. He's insisting that this is a mistranslation of what he said, that he did not say it in these words. What I think is probably the perfect Kucinich touch on this story is that he assumes that the mistranslation was an honest mistake. And he doesn't think that there's any foul play in the Syrian news agency saying he's giving kumbayas and hurrahs to Bashar Assad as he, you know, shoots lots and lots of people in northern Syria.
Oh, my. This is shades of Jimmy Carter going to Poland, announcing he had fled America and wanted to make love to Poland. I mean, this is a scary situation.
I guess what the lesson we could take away from this is maybe it's a good idea to stay the heck away from these sketchy regimes, these sketchy dictators, Jim.
The only thing is that I suppose I could see a scenario in value in going to a embattled dictator and kind of saying, look, either, you know, kind of it's time to go, or we in the United States are not supporting you, and it's time to contemplate that retirement on the French Riviera you've always been dreaming of. It does not appear that Kucinich was bringing that message. And in his correction to his statements, he said he simply was on a fact-finding mission. He was still figuring out what he thinks. Now, look, Syrian troops are shooting democracy protesters.
Right.
You know, I'm not sure how much more do you need to study the situation to say, look, whatever else we may think of the Arab Spring and the complications there, shooting at civilians is a bad thing. And apparently for Kucinich, that's too controversial a statement to come out and say. Plus, it's, you know, obviously when you go to Assad, there's always this, you know, insinuation that, like, we are bowing and scraping and, you know, begging with him to play nice, when in fact I don't really think that's the proper role for the leader of the free world. And no one will ever mistake Denis Kucinich for the leader of the free world. Gollum, maybe, but not the leader of the free world.
In a worst case scenario, we do know Hillary is looking to exit the administration. Perhaps Dennis is brushing up his bona fides to be the Secretary of State in a second Obama administration.
That was a bad martini.
Let's send that one back to the mixologist there. There is, however, a weird martini, and this is a mighty strange story. Apparently, those gun grabbers are willing to try literally anything, including running a television commercial, and I believe we've got the audio of this, the commercial, trying to link Al-Qaeda and Second Amendment rights and gun ownership. Let's give a listen to this commercial.
The latest Al-Qaeda plot instructs terrorists on how to buy guns in America.
This is a golden opportunity. America is absolutely awash with easily obtainable firearms. You can go down to a gun show and come away with a fully automatic assault rifle without a background check. So what are you waiting for?
Call your member of Congress. Tell them to close the loopholes that let terrorists and criminals buy guns.
Okay, Jim, what do you make of this?
Fantastically inaccurate on several fronts. The first of all is that it will not surprise you that Adam Gadahn is not actually accurate in his assessment of U.S. gun rights. Automatic firearms are not legal and have not been legal for many years. We saw a similar version of this that apparently Ayman al-Zawahiri, in one of his statements a few weeks ago, had made a similar argument to their, you know, what they hope they have followers in America, and they hope they'll hear these messages and take up arms. The Washington Post cited this and argued this is why we need stronger gun control laws. Now, if I'm trying to persuade Americans to change their laws, Brett, I don't know about you. I don't know if Ayman al-Zawahiri is the first authority I cite of saying, Zawahiri says this and we should follow what he's saying. So, but nonetheless, if the gun control groups want to keep citing Al-Qaeda statements in their arguments, I completely back this. My buddy Cam Edwards from NRA News thinks this is fantastic, and we want to get them a whole bunch of buttons that say, I stand with Ayman. Kind of just say, look, we understand you guys choose your allies carefully. You guys are in total concurrence with these guys' assessment of gun laws, their erroneous assessment, I would note. But they talk about loopholes that let terrorists and criminals buy guns. Hey, guess what? Criminals and terrorists are not allowed to buy guns. If you're on the terror watch list, you're not, you know, if you are a criminal, you're not allowed to buy guns in most jurisdictions. I suppose this would get into the gun show loophole argument, and I would note that the traditional example that the gun grabbers like to cite in these circumstances is the Virginia Tech shootings, even though the Virginia Tech shooter did not get his guns at a gun show. And if you were to, you know, enact the law that the gun control groups want to do, it would not have made a bit of difference in the Virginia Tech shooting. So actual factual evidence has never been terribly relevant to the gun control crowd. That's why if it were the case, District of Columbia would be the safest city in the world instead of being for quite some time the murder capital of the world. When I say that, by the way, some people say, well, do you measure it by sheer number of murders or do you remember this on a per capita basis? This kind of controversy is why I think we need some sort of playoff system between cities for which the actual murder capital of the world is. But the bottom line being that if gun control groups and other assorted liberals want to start citing Adam Gadahn and Ayman al-Zawahiri as experts in their arguments, go right ahead, fellas. Go see how that works with the American people.
Amen. Absolutely. I can't say it any better than you did, Jim. Listen, these are some amazing stories. I've had some great martinis. I've had some bad martinis. I've had some strange martinis. I feel like it's time to maybe get back there to work crafting together the next round of martinis for the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. I am Brett Witterbull in from Radio America. That is Jim Garrity in from National Review. What do you say we do it again tomorrow?
Looking forward to it, Brett. And I would note that if people see a strange change in the productivity at National Review and Radio America in the afternoons, now they know why.
Absolutely. Talk to you Thursday.
Looking forward to it, Brett.